Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, this is Bill, and welcome to this week's episode of Real World Fitness. Today, I've got a special treat for all my wrestling fans out there, and I've read the emails, so I do know there are several of you out there. Today, my guest will be former WWF World Wrestling Champion, Bob Backlund. Now, for those of you that aren't wrestling fans and couldn't care less about, the good news is we're going to talk very little about wrestling. We're going to talk a lot about Bob's conditioning, his fitness program, how he trained, how he learned about exercise, how he trains today at age 66 to maintain one of the healthiest, fittest, and strongest bodies of just about anybody you could ever want to see. Bob's an interesting guest and had a lot of fun talking with him. And like I said, we're not going to talk wrestling a lot in this. We're going to talk about fitness and nutrition and a little about wrestling. The main reason for that is because there's a lot more to him and all that other stuff has been covered time and time again. So why interview somebody and ask the same questions that everyone else asked? Now, before we get to that, I'd like to talk about the book I'm reading this week. It's called Can You Go? And it's written by one of my personal mentors, Dan John. It's a very clear, concise, simple book that is definitely worth reading. It includes assessments so you can figure out where you are, and it includes a very simple, systematic program to determine what you need to work on based on the assessment and how to get healthier, fitter, stronger, lose body fat, whatever your personal goals are. And the great news is that this book, Can You Go? By Dan John, is available through our sponsor, audiblepodcast.com/Serotalk. All you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/Serotalk and sign up for the free 1 month trial. And you can get a free copy of this book or any one of thousands of other books available there on audiblepodcast.com/Serotalk. So next week, we're going to have Dan on. We're going to talk about the book. And we're going to also talk about his three-day workshop, The Art of Coaching. He's doing one in London in a few weeks and a few across the U.S. in the fall. And I'm personally very excited about this because I'm getting myself ready to attend the one in Washington, D.C. in November. I've been following Dan's writing for several years and had the good fortune of interviewing him a couple times in the past. And, he's always been really kind about answering my questions for my personal needs, not just for the listeners. So I'm very excited about the idea of spending 3 days studying with him in person. Now, we have a new feature that we're going to debut today. My good friend, Lisa Flanagan, who is a recently retired school teacher and one of the most physically fit ladies anyone could ever want to meet, is also a voracious reader. And she has this habit of sending me these little articles that she finds online. Health benefits of garlic, how asparagus can cure cancer, the value of apple cider vinegar, this, that, the other. All these cool little home remedies, natural remedies, things that are very beneficial, can enhance your health, and cost you very little. Now, garlic's one of my favorites personally. I think it's funny when I see garlic capsules in the health food store. My wife and I eat tons of fresh garlic, probably almost every day it's in her cooking. So from now on, when we have a shorter interview or when we have a little extra time or when Lisa comes across something particularly interesting, she's going to come on and share these articles with you guys. So also she asked me to extend a request to our listeners that if you come across anything cool like this, please send it to me, and I'll pass it along to her, and we'll share it with everyone else. I know there's a spice. I think it's an Indian spice called tamarind or turmeric. I'm sure I'm saying it wrong. That's supposed to have some really amazing health benefits. I don't know too much about it, but I'd like to know more about that personally. So After we're done with Mr. Backlund, you'll have Lisa Flanagan sharing a very interesting article she found on apple cider vinegar. And it's kind of a cool tie-in, and we didn't really plan it out this way, but one of Bob Backlund's personal health secrets is to drink an ounce of apple cider vinegar every day. So it's a nice little tie-in there. Let's see now. We've talked about today's show. We've talked about next week's show. We've plugged the sponsor. I think that just about covers it. So now, without any further delay, let's get to that interview with former World Wrestling Federation World's Heavyweight Champion, the legendary Bob Backlund. Today, my guest is probably one of the greatest WWWF champions of all time. He's definitely one of the most physically fit professional wrestlers to ever compete in the ring, as well as one of the most physically fit individuals that I've ever seen. Even today at 65, he's in extraordinary condition, and it is my honor today to have as my guest Mr. Bob Backlund.
Bill, it's an honor for me to be a part of your program, and especially addressing the matter of health and people. It's a pleasure for me to be here, and thank you very much for allowing me to be interviewed.
Well, I'm just glad that the powers that be were cooperative and saw no reason for us to not do this. You are in extraordinary condition even today, and it kind of follows with every amateur wrestler I've ever known. In amateur sports, wrestlers are probably the best conditioned athletes out there. When did you start with your amateur wrestling, and were you always obsessive about being in super, super good condition?
I started when I was really got serious about it in 10th grade, about training and about trying to improve every day and trying to outwork other people. But I started actually wrestling when I was in 5th grade, but wrestling wasn't like it is now. You didn't have tournaments for kids going on just about all year. You had a little program at the high school gym or the elementary gym, wherever level you were at, and you didn't get a chance to compete very much until you got up into where you're going to be on the B team as far as the wrestling goes, as competition.
Okay, so you were an outstanding high school wrestler, an outstanding collegiate wrestler, and I think you played football as well?
I played football in high school and in college. I refused to go to the University of Minnesota because I wanted to do both.
And they wouldn't allow you?
I ended up going to a junior college called Waldorf, and then I transferred to North Dakota State after that.
Okay. So what was the problem with playing both sports at Minnesota?
They didn't want me to do that.
Huh. That's strange. You were obviously a good athlete.
Yeah. Well, Minnesota was had a pretty big football program back then, and right now today the wrestling program is better than the football, but back then they wanted you to be working on football almost all year round.
Ah, so when it was off season, they didn't want you worrying about another sport. They wanted you getting ready for next year.
Yes.
Okay.
But I believe that wrestling is very good for a football player because the position that you're in when you're wrestling on your feet is that same position that a linebacker has to use when he's going to tackle somebody. And I believe the skills that you get in wrestling help you to be a good football player.
Well, I think it would probably enhance almost any other sport because it improves balance, coordination, speed. The training is brutal. I mean, even at a high school level, what was a typical training week like for you, say, in high school?
Well, you know, once after school, once a day, you'd go to practice for 2 hours and work out and train, and you do that at least 5 days a week. And then the good wrestlers, the good wrestlers are the ones that don't need a coach. And I ran every day. When I was in high school, I told the coach in football that I wanted to have a football helmet. And he said, why do you want a football helmet? I said, I want to drill a hole in the top of it, and I want to put a little screw on there, and I want to put a 25-pound weight on top of that and screw that down so it'll stay there so I can put the helmet on and do my running and work my neck while I'm working out my legs.
Wow.
So when I jogged, I had a 25-pound helmet on my head.
Wow.
And I asked the coach what I told him I wanted. It wasn't that he told me to do it. So I did that religiously, yeah.
So that was your creation.
I wanted to do that. And then I wanted to lift weights. And my parents, we were very, you know, we had enough to eat, but we didn't have enough to buy extra things. I got a 5-gallon pail, and I got a 2-inch pipe, and I filled the 5-gallon pail with cement. I put the 2-inch pipe into the cement, left it there overnight, came home from school the next day, got another 5-gallon pail, filled it up with cement, tipped the thing upside down, and put the other end in the other 5-gallon pail of dry cement. Waited overnight, and it stiffened up overnight, and the next day, I lifted that that was my weightlifting training.
Okay, I'm trying to think, 10 gallons of cement.
It weighed about 185 pounds.
Okay, thanks for, I was going to try and do the math on that one.
It weighed about that. No, it was a lot of weight. I couldn't lift it when I first got in. But, you know, I wore that thing out, and I made it. It was something I made. I didn't buy. My parents didn't get it for me. And, you know, when you make the initiative, that's important. You did it, and I did because I worked to make that darn thing. I was going to use it, and I was going to get stronger from it.
And it obviously worked.
Yeah, my first workout machine that I ever used was me laying down in our house in a doorway, and my sister would sit on my feet, and I would push her up and down in the doorway. She could hold onto the door jambs to go up and down to keep her balance, and then I would push her up and down with my legs, and I was laying on my back. That was my first weightlifting machine, my sister, Mary.
You made your own leg press machine.
Yeah, using her, yeah. You know, and yep. Training and getting better was on my mind a lot. You know, I just come up with little things to try to get better.
Well, obviously you didn't have the extra funds, like you say, and you had the imagination and the desire and the creativity, so... What's the old saying about something about ingenuity and need? I can't think of it.
Well, I always say never say never. My parents couldn't buy it, but I shouldn't, you know, don't quit, you know, yeah.
There you go.
Anything's possible, yeah.
So then at that time, high school, I'm sure there wasn't any formal weight training really to speak of because that was back when they didn't believe in weight training for athletics. So you did it all on your own.
You know, when I was a sophomore in high school, we had a new football coach. His name was Ron Stolsky, and he never lifted weights in his life, but he knew that weightlifting was good for football players. And he came in, and it was myself and a guy named Ross Johnson. And Ross Johnson and I were a lot different. I was hanging on the fence as far as being a good guy or a bad guy, and he was a perfect person. The only time we went down to Minneapolis and looked at a lot of the gyms and kind of find out what we should do and stuff. We started a little program. He and I, and the coach would open the door for us at 6:30 in the morning, and we showed up, you know, all during the school year, and we did some lifting, but we didn't have much. We didn't have any equipment at all. We didn't have a bench. We didn't have, we just had a barbell and some weights.
Well, you had enough, and you had the desire.
Yeah. And he was, this Ross Johnson was a perfect, I don't know, person. And he was very good for me to hear what he had to say. I wasn't exactly perfect. I was running around with some of the wrong kids. I made some wrong decisions. And, you know, it was something that was good for me to make way back then, the decision or the mistakes, and then correct them and never make the mistake again.
Well, it's good that you made the mistakes young in life instead of later in life.
Yeah, I was pretty much, when I was a senior in high school or junior in high school, I learned enough things and made the mistakes that I was ready to go.
Well, some people never learn from their mistakes, so.
Well, and that's one of the keys to success is learn from adversity and defeat. And usually a defeat or some kind of adversity is going to make you negative. Well, you don't want to stay negative very long, so you try to turn it into a positive. And the way to turn it into a positive is to take that and learn from it. And every time you make a mistake, if you learn, you're going to get better. And just about anybody that is successful in life made tons of mistakes. You just don't hear about them. but they fixed the mistakes. They got stronger, and they finally made it to the top.
Okay. Were you a fan of pro wrestling when you were a kid, or did that come later?
No, my mom was a big fan. My mom was a real big fan. We couldn't leave the house till after 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays. And we had to be home on Saturdays by 9 o'clock because wrestling was on from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock in Minnesota at that time.
And it was required watching?
I watched some wrestling with her, and she used to get mad and everything. And so I know, you know, it was Zoran Gagne and, let's see, the guy called The Crusher and a guy called Mad Dog Vachon and Eddie Sharkey, which eventually that Eddie Sharkey trained me to be a professional wrestler. You know, so I knew about professional wrestling when I was probably 9 years old or so.
Okay, but it wasn't your dream back then.
It wasn't a dream. I was into amateur wrestling, and I liked wrestling a lot. Wrestling did more for me as far as success is concerned than any other sport.
Mm-hmm.
I figured that wrestling is like life. When you're out on the wrestling match, it's you against another opponent. And when you get done with that match, you have to shake that guy's hand. And you have to know how to win, and you have to know how to lose. And that same thing is going to happen to you when you go out into life. After you get your college degree or after you get out of high school, you're going to go out there and wrestle with the world to get a job and to be successful.
Well, that's true. Let's talk a little about your college. You went to the junior college and then finished up at North Dakota State, have a degree in physical education. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I went to Waldorf Junior College. It's in Forest City, Iowa. And believe it or not, in Iowa, the junior college was really pretty good wrestling.
Well, Iowa is definitely a wrestling state. Isn't that where Dan Gable's from?
That's where he's from, yeah. And he's, you know, he was fantastic. You know, that was, you know, I don't know if you remember Danny Hodge, but Danny Hodge and Dan Gable are pretty much equals as far as accomplishments.
Yep, I know Danny, met him several times in Vegas. Great guy.
Yeah, and I met him in Louisiana when I first started wrestling, in professional wrestling.
Do you ever work with him?
Yeah, we were in Japan together, and we were in the ring, I think, just once. And then one time, and I met him down in Florida, he was there, and he and I went over to Jacksonville, Florida, and we worked out with a high school team. We didn't wrestle with him. We showed them moves that we both liked.
Mm.
But I'm not comparing myself to Danny Todd's level as far as success in amateur wrestling. Nobody has really matched some of the things that he's done.
Now, Danny was in a class by himself. There's no question about that. And you couldn't ask to meet a more humble, nicer guy.
You're correct. Yeah.
Okay. So with the degree in physical education, I'm guessing you were planning on teaching?
You know, I didn't care for the classroom stuff. I liked working out, so I thought, you know what, I think if I was going to be out there teaching or doing something, I'd like it to be in some kind of physical area as far as working out. So I thought I'd be better a physical education teacher than I would be a math teacher.
Okay, that makes good sense.
Because that's what I loved.
Okay. Well, so was that the goal when you were going to college, to go into the teaching system as a PE teacher?
No, I wanted to get a tryout to play football.
Oh, professional?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're out of college, you've got your degree, and what kind of happened after that?
No. When I got done with college, I had three credits left. I finished my eligibility, but I had three credits that I had to get yet. Because in my senior year, I was almost not going to wrestle because I had so many credits to take. Matter of fact, I didn't go to practice, so I was taking classes, but I still went to the matches.
And you were good enough to get by on not making all the practices and still competing?
Yeah, I didn't do as well as I did the year before, but I got fifth in a heavyweight in the national tournament, but I didn't go to practice. I was working out when I could.
It's a statement of how good you must have been if the coach was willing to still have you on the team and let you miss practice.
Yeah.
So when you finished up with college, you What was the plan? What did you do? You didn't go right to Eddie Sharkey and say, I want to be a pro wrestler.
No, I didn't even hardly, I didn't know Eddie Sharkey. I just knew him by watching him on TV. I got out of college, and you know what? I played in a bowl game, and my stats, that I got 22 tackles and 2 fumble recoveries.
In one
in
game?
In one game, it was in the Rose Bowl. And we were playing Montana. And I'm thinking, what were the other guys doing on the team? But I was recruited by the wrestling coach, and the football coach didn't recruit me. And the other tackle on the team was drafted, and I wasn't.
Mm.
And he did play. The other one did play. He was. His numbers were right, but he. I don't know how. I don't think he got 5 tackles.
You were having a great day.
Yeah, I had a great day. Yeah, but anyway, when I finished up with my eligibility, I still had the 3 credits. I played 1 year semi-pro football, and decided there was not much future out of that, so I had to go in another direction. And I came home, and I was working. All my years through high school, I worked for a guy that did plaster and stuccoing.
That's hard work.
And I went for him. Yeah, I went to work for him, and I was living in Anoka, Minnesota, and I was going to a gym in Minneapolis called the 7th Street Gym. And I didn't realize this, but Eddie Sharkey ran that gym, and Eddie Sharkey had a wrestling ring in the back, and he was training people there. And I worked out there a few times, and he finally came over and asked me, and I wasn't thinking of that, but he came over and asked me if I wanted to try to get into the professional wrestling business, and that he would train me.
What year was this?
This was in 1972. And, it was 73, and it was in the middle of the year. He told me that by the time I left the gym, I went over there and asked him how much he'll charge me, and I told him I would do it.
Mm-hmm. How long did you train with him before you had your first pro match?
It was probably about 6 months. 6 months.
Do you remember who your first pro match was against?
It was Ron Starr. It was Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yeah, Ron Starr was around for a long time.
Yeah, and I got in the wrestling business. When I left Princeton, Minnesota, I had a green Chevrolet Impala, and I had $20 in my pocket. When I got down, and I made a reservation at the Sheraton for that night. When I got down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, I had a wrestling match, got paid. I had an envelope, went out in the car, opened the envelope, and I had 40 cents left in my pocket from the $20 because of the gas getting down there. And I looked at the money, and it was $5. I canceled the reservation at the Sheraton. And I was wondering what I was going to do. Well, the Chevrolet Impala had a voluminous trunk. So I slept in the trunk. And I didn't know what I was going to do because I was about maybe 1,000 miles away from where I knew anybody at all. And when you say start at the bottom, I was at the very bottom. I slept in the trunk of my car for a while. And it got really, you know, almost down to, should I try to get home? I don't have enough money to get home. But and every day I tried to get to the gym because it kept me feeling good with the positive things that were the negative things that were going on. But I was eating tuna fish out of the can, and my favorite tool was the can opener. and I remember those days, and to this day, I'm glad those things happened, because when I started doing a little better and a little better, I always wanted to save, because you never know, and yet I never wanted to be in that position again in my life where I didn't know what I was going to eat from day to day or where I was going to sleep.
Who was the promoter in Louisiana at that time? I'm guessing Bill Watts?
Leroy McGirt.
Ah, of course.
Yeah, and Bill Watts wasn't there yet. Grizzly Smith was the booker.
Okay.
And you know, Bill, it was all a test.
Mm-hmm.
That's the nature of our business back then, is we want to know how bad they want to get in. If you can't do 1,000 squats a day, then get out. If you aren't tougher than the fans, we don't want you.
That's when everybody wanted the business to appear to be real. And you had to go through hell to get in there, didn't you?
You had to pay a price, yes.
Well, that's why back then a lot of the fans didn't know for sure. They thought it was fake, but they didn't know for sure because it sure looked real.
Yeah. Well, you know, you had some real good artists back then as far as the skill. And wrestling is an art. And you had some people that were very good at it. You know, Harley Race and the Funks, and they were fantastic in the ring. Vern Gagne, Mad Dog Vachon, just they were all masters. And, you know, I didn't know Bruno Sammartino at times, but, you know, I agree that he's probably the greatest champion of all times.
Well, if you look at lengths of title runs in the WWF, am I correct that you actually had the longest continuous run of anybody?
No, Bruno Sammartino didn't.
Ah.
Bruno Sammartino had it for 11 years.
Didn't he have a break in there where he lost it and
You know, I'm not positive. Yeah, he did have a break, and I've never really checked on where that break was, if I had more, you know, more years in a row. Yeah, that could be possible, but I'm not positive about that.
Well, Bruno, you know, had the belt for a long time, but he lost it to, who did he lose it to? Ivan Koloff, and then took it back after a bit. And I think I read when I was doing the little bit of research for this interview online that you actually had the longest continuous run, because from when you beat Graham to when you dropped the belt to the Sheik, that was a nonstop run. You never lost it. I think that is actually the longest continuous.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm not an internet guy or anything, so I've never really checked to see how long that reign went as far as one complete reign. So, yeah, I'm assuming you're correct, but I can't verify that.
Hey, even if it is Bruno, you're in some pretty, pretty impressive company.
Yeah. Well, it's important for me to know. I'm going to check and see what the dates were that he, you know, won and lost the championship.
I'm sure the fellow that's helping you with the book knows.
Yeah, he does, because he knows more about me than me. Yeah. That you asked a good question. and you answered it. So I'm gonna try to just find that same information. That'd be interesting. Yeah.
I piqued your curiosity. And I want to apologize to everyone that's listening. There is some background noise that we can't do anything about. My lawn is being cut while we're doing this. They just started. So, so where did you go from Louisiana?
I went over to the Funks, to the Amarillo area.
And I know you did well there.
It went very well there, yeah. It didn't do well, but compared to what I was doing in Louisiana, it was I'm starting dirt bottom here, and it was better than Louisiana. Yeah.
Well, it's called paying your dues, my friend. Didn't you tell me that your first TV match in Amarillo was held Terry Funk to a draw?
Yes, it was.
That's a nice start.
That was a big compliment. Yes.
Yeah. Terry's a nice guy. Terry's good people.
Well, you know, he's a nice guy, but he was also on top of the world as far as the NWA was concerned.
But for him to be willing to put you over like that, that shows that he had a good eye for talent and wasn't afraid of making somebody else look good.
You know what? And that's, you know, they were really pretty instrumental in some of my training, and you know, that's what a champion does.
That's what a champion used to do, anyway.
That's what a champion had to do. Then, yes. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be a champion very long.
This is true. So what was your training like at that time, and how hard was it to consistently train when you were on the road all the time?
I always found some place to train. I'd stop the car and train in one of those places where you get gas on the highway. Pull over there, do some squats and some push-ups, and I hardly ever missed a day.
Wow.
And then I was lifting weights, when I could get to a gym. I was lifting pretty heavy and doing a lot of free squats. But there was always time in my life, no matter what I was doing, that I was going to take that hour aside, maybe an hour and a half, and make my day. Because you're training and you get the feeling that you get afterwards is fantastic. And the only bad feeling I ever had is when time I didn't work out, and it was one day, and I never did that again because I like the good feeling I get from the amount of blood that's flowing through your body and the energy that you have when you get your gym, your workout completed.
That endorphin rush, I think they call it.
I think they call it that, yes.
No, it's obvious you weren't just doing body weight exercise, at least when you were working up in New York, because you carried a lot of muscle mass on you.
Well, you know, up in New York, I wasn't lifting weights as much. I was doing the Harvard step test and the wheel.
That's it?
Yeah.
You were huge.
Those are the only two. But I was, you know what the Harvard step-ups, you step up and down on a chair or a bench. I had something made that I could step up and down on. And then the wheel, I had a special wheel made for me because I wore the ones out in that you buy at a store that are sort of fiberglass. I'd wear that out in 2 months. It would get so warm. The bar would get so warm that it would wear off a little bit of the fiberglass, and I could see little pieces of it where I was rolling it back and forth on the floor in the carpets in the motel room, But in two months, the handle would go right through the wheel because the hole was so big. but I was doing 400 reps a day.
Your biggest expense was those wheels.
But I was doing the Harvard step test for an hour, and then after I got done doing the step test for an hour, I'd do 400 reps on the wheel in one set.
That would definitely put anybody in great shape. I'm just honestly surprised though, because you carried a lot of muscle mass back then, and I'm surprised there wasn't any weights involved.
No, that wheel is a complete upper body workout if you do enough reps. It works your back tremendously.
Have you ever used the power wheel that Lifeline USA put out, the one that has the foot cradles attached to it?
No. No, I never did.
It's kind of a cool gadget. And so you can imagine what you can do with that based on having it on your feet instead of having it on your hands.
Yeah. No, I liked what the wheel was doing for me. And I had one that was a 6-inch wheel, and it had steel ball bearings in it and a metal rod going through it. And I couldn't wear it out. One time, I don't know if I told you this, but one time in the WWE, I wanted to do a demonstration on the wheel, and I did a demonstration on the step test on their program, and then they let me do a demonstration during the wrestling matches where I did the wheel for 50 minutes. And in that 50 minutes, I did 803 reps.
I remember watching you do the step test, and I remember they had right towards the end, I think Sergeant Slaughter attacked you to build up the angle for your upcoming match against him.
Yes.
Did they have somebody attack you when you were doing the wheel as well?
No.
Okay. Cause I don't remember seeing that, but I remember the step test thing. When you do the wheel, I'm just curious, and this is just for myself, but when you do the wheel, do you do them off your knees or do you do them like off of your feet and then all the way down and all the way back up or in a kind of push-up
position?
When I did
that many reps, I was doing it on my knees. When you're doing a step test, you work from your hips down, just about every muscle from your hips, right from your waist down. You're working, doing a Harvard step test. And I figured for the wheel, I'm doing everything from the hips up. So I just, I used my knees. If I stood on my toes, I'd be using my legs also to pull myself back.
Yep. A lot of hamstrings involved then, yeah.
I did it a few times, you know, just did it on my feet, but I know I didn't do a lot of reps when I was doing it on my feet.
Okay, so your whole training program focused on, for your lower body, the step test, and for your upper body, the wheel. And I'm guessing it's pretty much still the same?
I've changed things a little bit, yeah. Last night, I did 425 squats, and then I did some bent over rowing, and then I did some bridging, and then I did some isometrics for the chest, and then I took a shower.
Okay. 425 body weight squats, I assume.
Yep. No. Yeah, just body. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
And tonight I'll probably do 500. And then over the weekend I do less training and do more stretching. Every day of the week I get up about 6:30 and I stretch.
Is your wife as addicted to fitness and training as you are?
She's in physical education also. She had a degree from North Dakota State University, and she's into physical fitness. She doesn't train at home much, but she's pretty active in her classes.
You were telling me about a day when you were running for Congress and what you did to get a lot of people's attention that day with the step test.
Yeah, I went into Hartford, which is in Connecticut. It's the capital. And there was a road that had a bridge going over the Connecticut River. And the people that were coming into work would go on that bridge. It was pretty jammed at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I was in an area in between the going one way and going the other way, where I had the step test, and I was doing a step test, and I thought I'd do it maybe for an hour or so. And I didn't bring any water or anything like that to drink. I ended up doing it for 8 hours. And some people started bringing me, something to drink and stuff like that out of the office buildings, because they looked out the door and they see I was still doing it. But I did take a half hour off for lunch. I went and had some carbs. And then I went back and started doing it again. And it ended up, it was about 8 hours. There's people that saw me go into work doing it. And then when they were leaving work, they saw me still doing it.
You end up on the TV news that night?
But yeah, they had, well, the Channel 3 in Hartford was right on the corner where I was doing it. So they came out and wondered what the heck I was doing there. I said, I'm celebrating the election, but I didn't win the seat in Congress.
Well, you had the determination to run and put yourself out there, and that's not as good as winning, but it certainly is an accomplishment.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to talk about running, because I would not run if somebody even paid me to run. I believe that if you run long enough, you're going to have a problem. And I never had, and when I started doing a step test because I was having a lot of knee problems because of running. And the problems went away with my knees when I started doing the step test. And they don't bother me when I do the squats. But I believe if you run long enough, you run hard enough, sooner or later you're going to have some kind of problem.
I would agree with you. I'm not a fan of running at all. And never had an issue in my knees from squatting, and I used to squat pretty heavy years ago.
Bill, one thing too, though, I didn't run because of that, but somebody will show me a program that they think is great. I'll look at it and say, what's that going to do to me if I do it for 2 or 3 years straight? And most of them I turn down, because I'm going for the long run. I'm not going to a couple of years. I want to do it for the rest of my life.
Well, you already have put in a long run. You've been training for, let's say you said 10th grade, so you would have been 14 years old. You've been training for 50 plus years.
Yeah, but I'm still going for the long run, though.
Yep, another 20 or 30 to go.
Yeah, it's never over. Yeah, but when you interject training and the right mental attitude in your life, things change fast. And things get better fast, and you start having more fun, and your system runs better, and the world goes better.
Yeah, the world's a better place when you physically feel good.
Yes, sir.
It's obvious that you definitely believe that it's even more important now in your 60s than it was back when you were in your 20s or 30s to really push the exercise and stay healthy.
Everybody's probably different on this, my little philosophy here, but when I hit 64 years old, I could tell that nature was depleting my strength. I actually was going to stop lifting weights and just do push-ups, and I started lifting weights again to fight nature. I'm not going to let nature take my power away from me. I want that power. So I lift weights, and it's very important when you get older to continue lifting weights and keep your strength. It will go away fast if you stop.
Let me ask you this, Bob. For all the years you spent in the ring, do we have any really bad injuries we have to work around?
No, I don't. I don't have a joint pain in my body, but I've been taking apple cider vinegar for 30 years, and it's very good for arthritis pain. But in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, there was a battle royal there. And when I grew up, the ring was set up so you couldn't really get thrown out. Or when I was trained, you couldn't get thrown out of the rope. I hit my hip on the side of the ring when I went over the top rope one time. I have a little click in my hip, but it doesn't bother me. I've never went to the doctor for it, and I'm not going to, until I have a major problem with it, I'm just going to leave it like it is. But I know it's there, but it doesn't bother. You can't tell when I walk, it is a little click noise every once in a while. And I do invert every day too, Bill. You know, I hang upside down, so that's helped me keep the vertebrae separated in my back, and I think it's helped me keep some of the tendons and ligaments lined up in my hips and my knees.
Do you use a table or do you use the boots?
I use the boots.
Wow. I used to use the boots.
I remember hanging up on a street sign in Buffalo, New York on Main Street because I couldn't find a place to do it.
Great position to do ab work in, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I used to go into a hotel room and I couldn't find a bar. So I went into the bathroom. It's usually the men's, the toilet, there's a door on it, and there would be a bar across it. I'd hang on there for a little while to see if it was strong enough. And then I'd hang in the bathroom for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever. And then I'd go up and got my little hanging up and upside down in for the day.
That sounds like a lot of other guys in wrestling I've talked to. It's just you make it do of what the situation is. You find to make your situation work. Since you mentioned the apple cider vinegar, let's talk about your nutrition a little bit. Do you take a lot of supplements, and what is your nutrition like?
You know, and I didn't like spinach at all, you know, and I trained myself to like it, and I eat a lot of spinach every day. I drink apple cider vinegar every day. I probably eat a couple apples every day. I eat scrambled eggs or hard-boiled eggs, probably two or three a day. I eat small meals. I eat probably six times a day. I don't eat any big meals. I keep my metabolism going most of the time, and it works pretty good.
We know there's a book coming out in the near future, and I'd like to bring you back then to talk about the book. And we've talked a little about wrestling. We've talked about your background. We've talked about your exercise. Is there anything you would like to say in closing to wrap this up?
Well, gee, I thank you for the offer to come back when it's finished. I've got 200 pages in front of me here that I'm looking at, and we're getting pretty close, and I'd love to chit-chat with you after the book comes out.
And we'll have Bob back as soon as that new book comes out, and we'll talk further about his career and about the book. And just for point of reference, you know, those of you that have never done step-ups or done the exercise with the wheel, the numbers he's talking about are mind-boggling. I once worked up to 1,000 step-ups, and it took me an hour, and I was hurting for days. And when I use the wheel, I do sets of maybe 10 repetitions, take a rest, do 10 more. So for him to do 400 consecutive, this is one amazingly, amazingly fit guy. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we have a new segment this week, and from time to time, my good friend Lisa Flanagan is going to come on and share some really cool information she finds with us. Lisa is one of the most physically fit people I've ever known. And as a retired school teacher, she's a voracious reader. And she's found some interesting articles online, and we're going to have her come on from time to time and share one of those with you. And it just so happens that one health secret, longevity secret Bob mentioned, apple cider vinegar, which he uses on a daily basis. Lisa just happened to come up with a really interesting article on that subject, and now my good friend Lisa Flanagan.
Hi, everybody. This is an article for the most talked about natural remedy in folk medicine ever, apple cider vinegar. The healing power of apple cider vinegar, and we'll refer to it as ACV for short, has been known for millennia, dating back to ancient Egypt, Rome, and Greece. The Roman army used an ACV tonic to stay strong and healthy. Research is starting to validate mounds of anecdotal evidence that ACV is not only useful, it's effective. For weight loss, in Japanese studies, participants who drank more ACV than their counterparts during a 12-week period had lower BMI, waist circumference, and visceral fat than the control group who drank none. According to one study, consuming ACV decreased the risk of esophageal cancer. In clinical trials, ACV was shown to slow the growth of cancerous cells within the prostate. And the Gerson Institute, a leader in cancer research and treatment, fights cancer with a therapy that alkalizes the body to inhibit the growth of cancer, because cancer can't survive in an alkaline environment. ACV naturally alkalizes your body. I could go on and detail 81 ways that ACV can change, save, improve, and simplify your life. That's no exaggeration. After months and months of research into what is no doubt the most beneficial natural health tonic ever known to man, I've uncovered 58 ways ACV can improve your health, ranging from minor to life-saving, 15 household uses, including cleaning and gardening solutions that are all earth and animal friendly, 5 ways to pamper and care for your skin on the cheap, and 3 personal care uses that will not only save you tons of money, but are toxin-free, unlike what you've probably been using now. But first, let's talk about why ACV is so amazing and how to make sure you get the right kind of ACV to start rejuvenating, healing, burning fat, preventing chronic illness, and feeling better. Raw organic apple cider truly is nature's perfect miracle food and should never be confused with regular clear vinegar. Clear vinegar has none of the health properties of ACV and can actually be harmful. Traditional uses of ACV are almost limitless. To name just a few, ACV has been used to ease digestion, aid in flu prevention, reduce inflammation, regulate pH balance, ease nausea and heartburn, as a staple in detox regimens, and for a number of skin conditions, including reducing acne and smoothing wrinkles. But why exactly does ACV contain so many healing properties? The secret may lie in its alkalizing effect. Even though ACV is acidic, like a lemon or lime, it creates a perfect alkaline environment in your body that is the exact opposite of what most diseases require to thrive. And then there's the incredible concentration of naturally occurring vital nutrients. Raw organic ACV is made from organic apples and undergoes a double fermentation process, which produces enzymes and preserves its health-promoting characteristics. There's something wrong with our way of thinking when something as pure and natural as ACV is considered an out-of-the-box remedy, when in fact it's just a good old simple common sense way to promote overall health and well-being. So why do some people find it hard to believe that one simple food can do so much good? Partly because we're conditioned to believe that natural cures don't work and that we have to put our faith in dangerous pharmaceuticals to find relief. Now, if that's not out of the box, I don't know what is. How often has the next big drug been fast-tracked through the FDA and fed to millions of trusting people, only to discover that the medicines they were taking were making them sicker, even killing them? Mother Nature, on the other hand, is all about handing you just what you need to enjoy. Using ACV to promote your well-being, stop hair loss, treat a bladder infection, alleviate allergies, reduce varicose veins, lower your blood pressure, or soothe a sore throat is so simple, you only have one rule to follow. Dilute, dilute, dilute. Doesn't get much easier than that. ACV is highly acidic, so it's always best to mix it with water. If a particular remedy calls for 2 teaspoons of ACV to be ingested, stir it into a glass of water, because drinking ACV straight may damage tooth enamel or burn going down the hatch. Drinking diluted ACV tastes just a little sour, but I'll tell you, it's much easier to drink to your health than deal with the long list of downright scary side effects you'll hear on the TV drug commercials, the ones that make you wonder if it's safer just to stay sick. It can be used for first aid, and the applications are easy. For example, for itching, you use a quarter cup of ACV, a cup of water, and a clean cotton ball. Mix the ACV with water and dab the affected area a couple times a day. It could be used for painful boils, athlete's foot, jock itch, fungal ear infections, corns, calluses, or warts, even swollen, unsightly varicose veins. It could also be used to apply for a sore throat. You need just a quarter cup of ACV, a quarter cup of filtered water. Mix them together at the first sign of a sore throat and rinse several times a day. Rinse with water afterward. Another use for it is for personal care and for skin care. Again, very easy to apply. Fill a small wash basin with warm water and a half a cup of ACV. Standing in the shower or tub, dip your hands in the mixture and massage all over your body and thoroughly wet. Massage the balancer into your skin until it is dry and don't wash it off. ACV also makes an excellent cleanser, and it can be mixed with a few other natural ingredients for an excellent beauty mask. It can also be used to remove the residue and restore shiny and bounce to your hair. Using just a half a teaspoon of ACV with a cup of water, pour it into your hair and rinse. There are so many more effective ways to use ACV. I encourage looking online, getting the book, doing your best to find out more.
Thank you, Lisa. That's very interesting. The only problem with some of those ideas, putting it on your skin and so forth, is you can walk around smelling like a salad.
That might be true.
So that's interesting. The reference to the book is this was promotional literature attached to somebody's book, but it's all good information, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share that with us, Lisa.
You're very welcome, and I think the name of the book is Mother Nature's Household Elixir.
Okay. I'm sure it's easy enough for you to find on Amazon or somewhere on the net if you're interested in purchasing it. Now, next week's show, we'll be featuring one of my favorite guests, Dan John, the best strength coach there is out there. And we're going to be talking about Dan's most recent book, Can You Go? And I'm really, really happy that Dan puts up with me emailing him and asking him questions all the time because he's great. I have told him when I get to be too much of a pest, just let me know because he's a great guy. He takes time to answer people's questions, and I'd be very happy to have him here on next week's show. And you've been listening to Real World Fitness. We spoke with WWWF champion Bob Backlund and had some interesting information about apple cider vinegar with my friend Lisa, and we'll be back next week. Thanks for taking the time to listen. This is Bill saying have an awesome week. Real World Fitness is a production of the Serotalk Podcast Network in cooperation with KosiabaFitness.com. All questions, comments, and feedback should be submitted to resources@serotalk.com. If you're listening on a mobile device, use your iBlink radio app to submit an iReport. Promotional consideration paid for by Audible.com.